all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused a fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RAMs, zip sits. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 30, coming to you this day in history, or in future, actually, as we record this, but you know what I mean, January 27th, 2004. I am Stank Dog, and I am joined by our good friend Rax, back for another episode. Welcome to you, my friend.
Thanks, man. Good to be back.
And we are going to jump in to our housekeeping feedback section, because we got a lot of good stuff this time. I'm going to jump right into the first one, because it's a follow-up from last week's episode. And actually, we've had a running topic that we've been doing for the past, gosh, 3 or 4 episodes of 101 Things to Save the Internet, Ways to Save the Internet. And last week, both In Theory and I were both kind of stumped as to what one of these was referring to, because we never heard of it. So I got an email from a couple people, but I got one, and actually I had the real name, and you know we don't give that out on the air, but somebody from the West Side, basically explaining to us, which I am in turn explaining to the listeners, about Fandango. We had never heard of Fandango before. Being on the East Side, we had Movie Phone, and I never heard of Fandango. We assumed it was something related or similar to Movie Phone. But he informs us, quote, "Fandango is an online ticket ordering service that allows one to print movie tickets at home and walk directly into the theater bypassing lines. The service charge costs $1. All the theaters, AMC, Edwards, Century, blah, 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 here on the West Coast have Fandango ads during the movie previews featuring annoying paper bag puppets." Now, are you familiar with Fandango?
No, we don't have it here in Arizona. We have Movie Phone, but, you know, I got to tell you, it's just charging you an extra buck to do that. It's just, it's just another revenue source for them. It's like I was going to buy some tickets for a show here, a concert, and through Ticketmaster, and if you wanted to pay the, get them online, rather you could pick them up at will call. They had some kind of electronic service charge already, like an extra $5 per ticket, and to email them to you, they were going to charge like an extra $2. All right, how much does it cost to send those electrons? Do they really need to charge $1 for that extra convenience? I don't think so.
No, I mean, we all know what a ripoff, and they're famous for it, Ticketmaster and those type things. They're famous for those service charges, and everybody hates them because of that. But, hey, where else are you going to go for tickets?
Well, you know what they have you do is you walk inside the lobby of the thing, and they have these little kiosks there, and you put in your piece of plastic, and you swipe it, and you pick it up there, and there's no lines.
Yep. Well, there you go. The movie theater that I normally go to, let's see, I think it is MovieCo that owns it. Frankly, I don't go a whole lot, but I'm pretty sure, as a matter of fact, I'm almost positive it's MovieCo. They have touchscreen things, like you said. You slide your card in, and you can buy the tickets right there. But you can also go online, I think, to MovieCo.com. Gosh, I hope I didn't turn this into a commercial for them. You can go online, and you can do the same thing. You can order online with a credit card and print the ticket out. And same thing, you can bypass the line. But, I mean, you pay just the cost of the ticket. There's no additional charge or anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's BS when they start doing that kind of convenience charge, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of awkward to walk in with this big piece of paper, though. But, you know, and actually, you know what? They did something that I did like. They just started this very recently. The buying tickets online has been going on for a while and printing it. But they actually started a separate line for people who print their tickets off online. inside of the theater, not outside to buy them, but once you get inside, like if you get there early for Lord of the Rings or one of the big movies, which is the last thing I saw, you have to wait in line to then get in the theater. So you want to get there early to try to get a good seat and all. If you printed it off yourself, they let you go straight to the front of the line for doing that as a reward, I guess, if you want to think of it like that.
No, that's cool. That plus not charging you extra for that. That's right. Good. That's worthwhile.
Yeah, I like that. I do like that about them.
That's like you know, all these other things, too. People are doing that and trying to save them money, making more money. A lot of the you know, banks and credit cards, they want you to sign up for an electronic statement. Well, right. I don't do that because, you know, if there's no benefit to me that saves them money. And
right.
I'm already paying them a boatload of money anyway to handle my finances. But my credit union, they said if you have direct deposit and you sign up for e-statements, they'll give you free bill pay. That's worth it, you know. So note right. to the marketing people out there, if you're going to do something like that, yeah, technology's great. We like technology, but we're not stupid.
Exactly.
Which it costs for those electrons. So, you know, don't try to snow something over on us and turn it into a profit center for you.
Right. You know, and
that's
and
a comment.
That's exactly what happened to me. I refinanced my home about a year or so ago because the old company I had, which was, oh, let me share with you, because they sucked. It was, what were they called? Chase Manhattan Mortgage. Big credit card company also. But that's what they would do. If I wanted to set up automatic payments, automatic deductions, where I give them my checking account, stuff like that, which obviously makes it much easier for them. They save money. They get their money guaranteed. It's all good things for them. They actually wanted to charge me a fee to do that. Like, how crazy is that? That just blew my mind. So, of course, I said, heck no, and didn't bother with it, and refinanced with a new company, and that's one of the first things I asked them was, at the very beginning, my, listen, here's the problem I had with the other company. I said, with you all, can I set it up like that? And if so, what is the charge? And their quote was, we will never charge you to pay your bill. Like, well, my God, is that really that much to ask?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's sad that that happens sometimes. But anyway, so yeah, that's I'd never heard of that before, so now that clarifies that. We assumed it was something like that. But the other thing is, if MovieCo is doing this on their own, why are these people outsourcing it to this Fandango company and stuff to order online and charge an extra buck for it? And I would imagine some theaters out in the big cities and stuff might be $10, $11 tickets already.
Oh, yeah, a lot
you know,
of places
they're
are,
like
I've heard that just the other day, that, I mean, East Coast, New York and that, I guess they're kind of used to that, but here, just went to the movie last night, it was $8.50 a head for adults.
Yeah, same here.
So, you know, when they start getting up around there, it's just crazy.
Yeah, and you know, you go with a date, that's $20 right there in tickets.
Well, then you get the, you know, 55-gallon drum of Pepsi that's, you know, $10 and all that other stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if you have this, but the same theater I was talking about, I don't know if this is specific to ours or if this is common, but first time I'd ever seen it was they have an upstairs section that costs more to get into. Do you have anything like that?
No.
We have a balcony section that's, I think it's called the Premier Theaters or something like that. Basically, it's the same auditorium that everyone else is, but it's a balcony up top with... luxurious plush seats where you can stretch back and they're not, you know, you're not crammed all up with everybody else. You can kick back, relax. I think it's like $15, $18, somewhere along those lines, just to get in up there each. But you get valet parking, which I guess if you're lazy, I don't know.
Well, then the valets still probably expect you to tip, though.
Exactly, so you got money on top of that. What they do give you is you get free popcorn.
Ooh.
Yeah, big deal. That's the cheapest thing they make. It costs them a nickel to make a whole bucket full of popcorn. But they don't give you a free drink. So you eat all that popcorn, and you're, of course you're thirsty with all that salty popcorn, so you end up getting that anyway. And then on top of that, they have a theater, supposedly a restaurant, an exclusive restaurant up there as well that you can't even access and get into to order food unless you have purchased tickets to see a movie.
Right.
So it's kind of an exclusive club type thing, and I've heard the food isn't all that great, and it's overpriced as well. So,
well, I had heard about trying to get it back to technology here. I had heard about something. I think it was in San Antonio, Texas. Maybe one of the listeners can write back and let us know. But where they had Wi-Fi in the theater. You remember reading about that?
No, I've never heard of that. That would be interesting.
Yeah, they had Wi-Fi stuff going at the same time. I don't know why you'd want to go to a movie and check your email or do IMing or something, but.
I guess it's better than your pager going off in the middle of the movie or your cell phone.
So if anyone's heard anything about that, write in and let us know.
Yeah, radio@benrev.com. I do know that ours has a daycare center with computers networked in it with little games for the little kids and stuff. But Okay, anyway, yes, back to technology. Let's go on to another email. First of all, thank you for that one, person whose name I can't read on the air. I got another email from a new listener named Cessna, who goes by Cessna. And he says, quote, "Hi, first off, I'd like to say that I love the show. You provide so much information on your show, I thoroughly enjoy listening to it. It has helped me understand the goings-on in some of my Novell classes. I'm taking an Associate's in Telecommunication Systems Management, the networking career path. It gets hard at times, but I crave learning about it." I love hearing that, because that's one thing that's just a trait of hackers. You always crave learning. You always crave knowledge, and it's just, it's unsatiable. It's unsatiable, and it continues throughout life, in my opinion. So I understand what he says by that. It goes on and says, "I found out about your show through Dual Parallel Site, and I found out about Dual Site through 2600 Magazine. I also listen to In the Now, Off the Hook, and Default Radio. All of these shows are great as well." Yes, they are. "I recently sent you money via PayPal for the first two issues of your magazine. Can't wait till I get them. I heard you talk about how Duhl and Bland are going to the next Hope conference. I'm planning on attending as well. Is there going to be a Ben Rav / Radio Freak America group going? Also, are you guys planning on staying at the Hotel Pennsylvania? I've never been to a conference. It was just one looking for some hints on what to expect and everything. Again, thanks for doing what you do. Keep up the good work. P.S. I downloaded the distributed.net program, but never received a welcome email." And actually, you won't, just as a side note to that, you won't receive a welcome email. Whatever email you registered with, go to distributed.net and do a search for yourself, and you will find yourself in the stats a couple days after you've uploaded, and you can go to a page where you set up your account of whether you want email. You can have them send you an email with password, at yada, yada, yada. So it's not going to automatically send you anything, because the potential is you could spam people by setting up accounts with fake emails, but we won't go into that. So, thanks a lot and take care, he says. And I, first of all, thank you very much for the kind words. I love hearing from new listeners. I'm glad that word on the show is spreading out there. Every time we get new listeners or an email from a new listener, I enjoy it very much. And on behalf of Duhl and everybody else, thank you for listening. I hope we can keep bringing you good information and entertainment. I hope a little bit in there as well. Now, as far as Hope 5... the fifth Hope, H2K4, whatever it's called. Hope 5 I'm going with for now. We don't have final plans. We don't know for sure what we're doing, because it is still a little ways off. But we are talking about it now and organizing what we're going to do. We don't know if we're going to be doing any kind of special events, bring magazines. I assume we'll try to bring some magazines to pimp them there, presentations. I don't know what all we're going to be doing exactly. But it looks like all DDP members are going. All eight of us will probably be there if we can at all help it. But not only us, but several members of the forums, everybody in the doghouse there's been two or three threads of people saying that they're going to probably go as well. So there's going to be a lot of people that we know and recognize there. So you can definitely keep an eye out, and I'm sure you'll bump into somebody there. But I do have to admit, personally, I've never been to a conference either. And we talked about that before. So, Rax, I'm going to defer this to you to kind of talk about the atmosphere in general and kind of what to expect for someone going for their first time.
Okay. Well, I'm reminded of, and Duhl actually pointed this out, he found the article. There was a columnist by the name of Dave Barry, who's well-known newspaper columnist or whatever, kind of humor columnist or humorist or whatever, but he was talking about Hotel Pennsylvania and how bad it was, and that the mattresses felt like they were filled with dead squid and all this other stuff. He really wasn't lying. It was,
as long as it doesn't smell like dead squid.
It was a pretty wild experience. First of all, this Hotel Pennsylvania is right downtown Manhattan, right across from Madison Square Gardens. And you might want to ask your parents or your grandparents about this, but there was a song called Pennsylvania 65000.
Mm-hmm.
Like the big band era.
Sure.
Well, that was about this hotel. And they had their own, you know, exchange. It was Pennsylvania. You used to dial on phones. You, like, dial PE and look up whatever those are, then dial the rest of the numbers. So it was Pennsylvania 65000. Well, that's still the number for this Hotel Pennsylvania. So it was a, you know, a big, huge thing and whatever. But that was like, probably, like, back in the big band era. It's, I won't say it's a dive, but it's, I stayed in better, okay? I've not talking five-star, four-star, three-star. I've stayed in better, you know, Motel 6s.
Really?
It was not, you know, so don't go there looking for, you know, a huge experience in the hotel. But the atmosphere of the conference is phenomenal. There's people there. I mean, you've got, anytime you go to any one of these conferences, there are 2,600 meetings, and it's really interesting just to people watch and see the diverse group of people that are there. I mean, you literally have the pasty-faced geek wannabes, you know, with the spiked green mohawk hair and the, you know, black leather everythings, to you know, to the feds, to you know, young kids. I mean, there were some kids I saw. There was about 14. Their moms or dads were kind of with them, but, you know, sitting off a far enough distance away. And it's a really interesting, really diverse group of people that you'll meet there.
I like the fact, by the way, that the kid would be there, their parents would come. I think that's great. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, we even had that at our 2600 meeting here in Phoenix, is that, you know, some kid came and his you know, folks were into it. I ended up talking to him later. Like, the dad worked for Intel, so they were, and he was kind of interested in the presentation that I was doing, too, but anyway, that's another story. But, yeah, it's cool, you know, so rather than, you know, just the knee-jerk reaction that some parents may have, oh, that's all bad and whatever else in that,
right?
You know, to have an open mind about it, man. But the conference, it was huge. The second floor, they had the whole retro computing area and all that. Matter of fact, if you go to oldschoolfreak.com and forget whatever section in there, you'll see the little video, Dual and Racks do H2K2, and you can kind of get a little feel about, you know, what things were like there. Lots of people, very crowded. It'll probably be even larger this time. So, you know, you have to be a little bit patient with people. You may not be able to get in to see everything that you want to see, again, because just the nature of these things is such that, you know, more and more people come, they tell their friends, oh, what a good time it was, and that, and they bring more people. So it may be hard to get in to see some of the stuff. It's definitely worth it. The quality of the presentations vary because, you know, hey, anyone can volunteer to, you know, make a proposal for doing a presentation. Some were very good, some were outstanding, some were really mediocre. But, you know, hey, what can you say? It's all, you know, and it's all what's interesting to you. Like, low-powered FM, you know, pirate radio station kind of thing wasn't really my cup of tea. Dual got off on it, you know. So
exactly.
It's there's really a lot of stuff going on. They had two rooms, I think, going on simultaneously. And I made the, I won't say it's a mistake, but I volunteered to work on the video crew last time, and I got to see pretty much everything that was going on in the big room, but I didn't get to go out much and see much of the city or see what's going on in the other rooms and all that. But if you're inclined to volunteer, I'm sure Emmanuel will put out a call for volunteers as well. It's a lot of fun. It was a lot of work for me as well, but it can be a lot of fun as well.
Well, in regards to the hotel, are there other options for hotels nearby, walking distance?
There probably are. I mean, you know, it's downtown Manhattan.
I wouldn't expect you to know them offhand, but that's probably an option, right?
It's probably an option. My opinion, though, always with going to those things, I mean, this is actually, I think it's better to stay in the conference hotel because, you know, you go and you do the things. They have like, videos showing at night. You know, they're playing all these hacker videos and stuff and Freedom Downtime and, you know, all these other little documentary things and all that is get played at night, you know. So some of the stuff is going on to, like, you know, 2-3 in the morning. That you can go crash. The other good news is that it doesn't start out like at 7 o'clock. It's like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock or whatever, because, you know, everyone's up all night, you know, hacking, drinking, partying, doing whatever, and they don't want to get started too early in the morning.
Okay.
But there would definitely be some other hotels around. You know, it will be Manhattan in the summer. I don't guarantee what price. So I think it was like $75 a night for the hotel as well. It was the conference special.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone's out there is interested in going, keep an eye on 2600.com. And my suggestion to you would be, if you plan on going, register as soon as they put the info out.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm going to do. And we got to talk about, like I said earlier, we haven't worked out our logistics. Maybe trying to get a couple adjoining rooms.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Something like that. And splitting some rooms, trying to eat up the cost as best we can.
Now, I don't know if they had, the rooms were actually pretty large. We had dual beds, but I don't know if they let, you know, if you can have more people crashing in the room than, you know, so I don't know if you can just, like, bring a sleeping bag and crash on the floor in the hotel room or not, but that'd be one thing to check into.
Yeah, and what are they going to do, police every room for something like that?
Yeah, that's true. I and how are they really going to find out? But
exactly.
You'd have to coordinate with, you know, if you only get two pass keys for the room, the card key things, then you'd have to coordinate with someone else in that.
Right.
But
I'm sure something like that could be worked out.
See, and it also varies, too. Like, Stank, you're just going to have to, like, fly up the coast. Me, I'm going to have to fly from Arizona, so that's like a, you know, 5.5-hour flight. So, that's a little bit bigger issue, dollar-wise.
Believe it or not, it's probably going to be a good length flight for me also, being so far south. But, I've already kind of talked to a couple of guys, Decoder and Epiphany and stuff like that, about finding some place to meet up and possibly meeting at the airport or something like that.
Yeah.
So, working out some of those logistics as we speak. But, see, at the same time, so is 2600. They haven't announced the show special rates
and
all that kind of good stuff. So, we're all working on it as we go along.
Yep.
So, I hope to see everybody there. Now, we have another email. We had a lot of good feedback this time. I like getting feedback. It gives me a lot of good stuff. I got another email from our good friend Pixel Fiend. He followed up on last episode. We talked about an article, and I'm not sure if you've caught up to the last episode or not, but I'll give you the short version. There was an article from the Associated Press, I saw it in my paper, about the very short version is how internet mapping services could be used for bad things. And there was one young lady they interviewed in there who was just shocked and dumbfounded that her personal information, like address and phone number, was available on the internet. We talked about how silly that might be, that in this day and age somebody is surprised by such a thing. But he goes on to remind us that not only that, but she'd probably have a heart attack if she realized the satellite photography that's also available on there on some of the mapping sites that can actually pinpoint, give you precise details and photographs of your backyard, including the objects like a picnic table or anything else that may be out there. Hey, you may have been out there when they took the picture, for all you know.
And laying in your backyard working on your tan.
Exactly. A natural. Hopefully not. I'm sure the author probably intentionally left that out for, you know, didn't want to scare the poor girl. I'm sure that's probably the reason she did it. I'm sure of that.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually remember a story last summer, about some guy, you know, got dumped by his girlfriend or whatever, and he went to, this is even more scary, but he went to, you know, one of those online find your long lost, you know, adopted father or whatever kind of site.
Right.
And, you know, paid like the $20 or whatever, got the information about where this girl was living, paid, you know, like $20 or something like that, and then got some information about that, contacted her there, she changed her phone number, then he, you know, went back, paid more money to this place to, do some more searching, find out where she worked, and in part of it, and this is interesting, and I think that it's a little bit of social engineering, but this, you know, quote-unquote detective agency online or whatever you want to call it, there was some other gal that posed as, you know, someone from the victim's bank, this woman that was being stalked. So the online web company had a subcontractor, had some other person, a woman, we can talk about that in a second, call, do a little bit of social engineering to find out where the victim worked at, and the wacko ex-boyfriend / stalker, you know, paid for all this, and totally paid, you know, like about $90 or something to get all this information, shows up at her place of work, blows her away, then blows his head off.
Oh, man.
And the company is saying, hey, we have no responsibility, we can't be held liable for what people do with this stuff. But, I mean, when they're, all right, let's face it, I've said it before, I'll say it again, you know, social engineering is a nice euphemism for lying, just like urban exploration is a nice euphemism for trespassing. But when they're going to that extent where they're, you know, calling up social engineering, lying to someone on the phone under getting that information under false pretexts, I'm sorry. You know, there's a dual-edged sword to everything, and I think you said it last week, you know, to their Stank, that, you know, all this information is a tool, and it's how you choose to use it.
Right.
That matters.
Which is why I'm going to have to disagree with you on social engineering being a fancy word for lying. Yes, there is lying involved sometimes, but not always. It's not a necessity or a requirement. And I've actually started on an article, which was going to be my next Hacking 101 article, that was going to be, it was entitled Social Engineering, but the subtitle was How to Be a Social Engineer Without Sacrificing Integrity. You don't have to lie. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you cross a line, but that's all on your choice and your decision.
Well, give me an example.
By proper choice of words, for example, you can properly choose your words to avoid answering questions. You don't have to lie, but for example, I'd like to find out this woman's place of business, this woman's place of work. Okay, sir, can I ask, are you calling from the business in question? My answer would be, I don't have to come out and lie and say, yes, I'm calling from such and such. I can say, now listen, would I bother calling you if I wasn't?
You know,
see, I'm not exact. I know what you're saying. The intent is definitely the same. I would not argue that. But by choice of words, you can kind of, and you may, that's a spur-of-the-moment example,
right,
too. So, but you can choose your words carefully to avoid coming out and directly lying.
Let me give you a famous quote that I think will kind of sum up your position on this.
Okay.
Okay, it was by a former president of the United States. It just depends on what your definition of is.
Well,
you know,
come on.
We're getting into semantics here.
No, much as I don't like being associated with that, I will, I don't, yeah. Anyway,
so,
bad example,
okay.
But there are occasions when, you know, frankly, sometimes social engineering can be as simple as coming out and asking a question. What about this? What if I simply come out, I call up a site, and I say, listen, I'm doing research for an article on your security practices. I'm not lying. I am doing research on an article, but I just neglect to leave out that it's an article for a hacking magazine. Is that social engineering, and B, is that wrong?
Well, I'm not going to get into right and wrong.
Well, is that lying? Is that deceiving?
It depends. Again, you say by your choice of words,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're leading the other person to believe something you want them to believe,
which is completely truthful.
Mm.
I'm writing an article on your security practices. Is that true or not true? If I came out and said I'm writing an article for a hacking magazine about weaknesses in your security, they're not going to give me what I want. That's pretty much assured. Correct. But by choosing my words carefully as part of the social, and I consider this part of the social engineering process, by choosing your words carefully and giving just enough information to get what you want, you can be completely honest and absolutely get the same information without completely selling your soul.
I'd agree with it, completely honest, because you know that you're leading them. You're not saying, I'm doing this for a hacking magazine. You're leading them to believe you're doing it for something else. So by your deliberate omission, I wouldn't agree that you're being completely honest.
Well, I'm being as honest as necessary.
That's different than being completely honest.
Well, I didn't lie.
No, but you weren't completely honest either. So what's your definition of is?
Yeah, well, no, it's not like that at all. See, you know the public perception when you mention the word hacker. See, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying I'm writing an article for a hacking magazine. I don't think that should be a bad question to ask, but reality tells us otherwise. Let's keep reality in this discussion. You know, the reality is if you ask it like that, even though it's still harmless, it's still about information and learning, I don't think there should be anything wrong with that. But I know damn good and well that if I do say that word, that I'm not going to get that information. They're going to make assumptions on me, false assumptions on me and what I'm going to do with that information. So why should I come out and give this extra information? So I don't think it's semantics of what is and what isn't. I think it's what they perceive and what I perceive. And instead of confusing the two and let them being led by their false ideas and false predeterminations of what a hacker is, why should I let that interfere? Let's just keep it out, open, and talk about the facts.
You know, there's actually a bigger issue relating to this, and I think it was addressed very well by a T-shirt. I'm heavily into T-shirt philosophy. It says, social engineering, because there is no patch for human stupidity. If someone calls you up and asks, you know, I'm doing a survey. survey, even if they, even if it's true. And I, you know, this, there, you could take your, any major university. If someone says, you know, I'm a student for a you know, XYZ university, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm doing a thing on banking, and I'd like to know who you bank with. I'm going to say, I'm sorry, it's none of your business. Goodbye.
Well, there, and there you go.
So that, because then they call that, you know, the human firewall. That's the weakest link. If you read The Art of Deception
Absolutely.
By Mitnick, that's the weakest link. You can get, you can talk people into giving you, you know, any kind of information, passwords, server names, whatever. But yeah, so that's the whole larger issue in relation to that. Anytime anyone asks you for something, I don't know, call me jaded now in the 21st century, but I'm thinking, what's your motive? Why do you want to know?
Right, and I do the same thing, and I agree with that. I agree with 100%.
Yep.
But, you know, there's a line that I guess each individual has to choose of,
well,
what should be known? What do I need to give? And is there any point? I mean, why should I?
How honest is honest? What's
yeah.
the definition of is?
Well, I don't know about that. But yes, how honest is honest? That's, I think that's a wholly separate than what your definition of is. What your definition of honest is a morals clause. And yeah. whether or not you your line is different from somebody else. Is, that's a verb. Okay? Verbs don't exactly have to do with one verb being different from another. So I don't see where that's apples and oranges there. In my opinion, of course.
Yeah.
And same thing with urban exploration. Yes, most of the time I agree with you, but there are some places that are public property and public paid for with our tax money. Why should I not be allowed to go exploring? Now, if they're marked no trespassing, obviously that's a different thing.
Okay, do they have to have a no trespassing sign on the Pentagon?
No.
And that's paid for with your taxpayers' money.
But I guarantee you the places you're not supposed to go and aren't allowed to go in there will be roped off, have security guards, metal detectors, and or no trespassing signs. If they're dumb enough to depend on a sign for security, though, that's a whole nother issue.
Yeah, well, we can get into all kinds of
but you know,
things on that.
Yeah, an old abandoned underpass, tunnel, train trestles, train station, something like that, you know? That can be interesting. You can find a lot of interesting stuff like that. An old abandoned public building. You know, this, as long as it's not posted.
But someone owns it, and if it's, even if it's public building. Well, again, we could get into a whole discussion on this. They had it on the air one time with Duel. So.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah.
I remember that episode. So yeah, there are some gray areas sometimes, but for the most part, I do agree with you. But I don't know, it's not completely black and white. That's all I'm saying. There are sometimes...
It's not black and white.
Huh?
In as much as, you know, all this digital technology of ours is binary, the world is, you know, is not just black and white. There's a myriad shades of gray.
Absolutely, and that's basically what I'm trying to say.
Anyway, boy, we got off on a tangent on that one.
Yeah, but it was a good tangent. That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. And we haven't even left the housekeeping. I still have another. Yeah, let's see. Email. Oh, yeah. Pixelfiend. I was talking about Pixelfiend. He had another point in here about. We also talked about IPv4 versus IPv6. And we kind of mentioned how we were running out of IP addresses, or they were running short anyway in IPv4, and how IPv6 was going to change this. We kind of talked about, we didn't know exactly how many were left. I don't think it's really a problem of exactly how many are left, or pinpointing, oh, there's this many thousand, or this, you know, I don't think that's really necessary. The point is simply that we're running out. I mean, it's definitely public knowledge. Everybody knows how the Internet is growing, and how the web in particular is growing, but the Internet in general is growing, and they're running out at a rapid pace. So putting an actual number of whether we're going to run out in 5 days versus 7 days, or 6 months versus 9 months, or whatever it happens to be, I don't think that's the point. It's just simply that we are running out. And you were mentioning earlier, we were kind of talking before the show, and you made a good point. Why don't you explain why, I mean, I think everybody kind of knows why IPv6 is important, but you were saying about the NAT.
Yeah, NAT, Network Address Translation, is one of the reasons, probably, I'd say probably the major reason that we've not switched to IPv6 already, why we have not run out of addresses already. And I was asking Stank, you know, how many computers do you have hooked to the net at your crib? You've got, like, what, four or five?
Five that are active right now, yeah.
Yes, I got about the same here. But I've got one live IP address out to the world. And that network address translation, I always kind of think of it as a funnel. So yeah, I have these five computers that have in the reserved range. I think it's RFC 1922 or something like that. But anyway, in that reserved ranges, at each class of IP address, Class A, Class B, Class C, there's a few others that we won't talk about, but there are reserved ranges that are not routed on the public Internet.
Sure.
The 10 address space in Class A, 172.16.
192.
And then 192.168.
Class B.
00 through 255.255. So there are groups of addresses that are private that will never be routed on the Internet. And every time you have your little Linksys box or whatever at home that's connected to your cable or DSL, and you can have 254 hosts out on the Internet, that's using network address translation. So again, think of it as a funnel. You've got all these things that are funneling down to the one IP address outside. And if I had to have five IP addresses here to be on the Internet, and Stank had to have five IP addresses, and every one of our listeners out there had to have five IP addresses, we'd be in a whole big world of hurt. But
because
of network address translation, we're staving off, you know, having to do the switch.
Right, and that's something else, because I also mentioned the fact, and maybe lesser so than what you're talking about, but I also mentioned the fact that dynamic IP addressing grew out of necessity or similar necessity, probably not as grand a scale, but the simple fact that an ISP, for example, may have a limited number of IPs that they can hand out, and that's really the reason sometimes they will charge you if you need a static IP address. Because what they will do, and obviously things have changed the way cable modems, and you're given a more consistent IP address for a week at a time. But it used to be much shorter time frames, where you know you may have 100 users persistent. I think is the word they use. You may have 100 users on your ISP, but you may only need 30 given IP addresses at any given time. And as soon as somebody hangs up, you release one and make it available again.
Right.
So you don't really need 100 exactly. I mean, potentially you would if every user was on the same time. So that's another minor example, but that's just another fact of how we have to make do and use what we have efficiently.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of other issues for IPv6, not just the address space and that, but converting over. I mean, virtually every device out there, and like the Cisco routers and that of the world have had support for IP version 6 for a while.
Right, a lot of places have.
Microsoft, you can download test version or whatever of an IP version 6 stack. But when it gets down to it, if you think upgrading your operating system is, you know, and then having everything work is a pain, well, imagine the underlying layer 3 of the OSI model is changed and shifted. You're going to have everything is basically you're ripping out the foundation underneath your house and sticking something else in there that is better than your original foundation, but you hope that everything works when you're done.
Right.
So there's huge issues to doing that, and they've actually have started. Most of the places have started, especially in Europe and Asia. I mean, we seem to be behind the curve on this stuff over here in North America, but on PDAs and cell phones and that, they just set it up and they just did IP version 6 from the get-go because, you know, why do something old and then have to change it in the future?
Right, and you know, I mentioned last week too about what a great opportunity for learning and hacking or however you want to look at it is for assigning every device out there will potentially be able to have its own IP address. My five boxes will be able to theoretically have an individual IP address for each one that is valid and shouted out to the Internet.
Well, I think I heard it said that every person on the planet, every hair follicle on their body could have a separate IP address.
I don't know about all that. That's interesting. I think I heard something similar about like one IP address for every square foot of land.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of comparisons like that. Actually, Saito, who I'm going to talk about in a few minutes, he did a report, did some investigation and crunched some numbers himself and came up with some interesting stuff. I'll have to touch base with him and see if I can get him back on the show again. I don't want to pull him off of Hack TV, though. So, and actually, you know what? That's a pretty good segue. Let's close up the mailbag and move on to our personal stuff because I do want to bring up a Hack TV update. First of all, though, I want to let everybody know that I am still working on setting up the streaming media server. I do want to set up rotation where people can listen to back episodes of BenRev Radio, which will be flowing all day, as well as RFA and all the shows mentioned earlier, as well as new shows like CCCPR and stuff like that, Off the Hook. Anything that, you know, that's hacking related, I want to mix into the rotation. But I didn't have, I was having problems finding some software, so I got to give thanks, shout out to DJ Mollusk for helping me out, giving me the software I need. I've got that up and running in a test environment. Unfortunately, it's not really ready for public consumption yet. I'm having a problem now with, without going into a lot of a detail, with bit rates and stuff like that, and getting everything converted to the proper bit rate for the server that it will accept and run smoothly, while at the same time not completely sucking all of my bandwidth out. So I am still working on it. As soon as I have that up and ready, I'll post it in the site and in the forums and make sure everybody's aware of it. We're still going to go on Rant Radio. That's not going to change, but we'll just probably be streaming the show live on two stations. It'll be kind of a backup since I had some problems with Rant Radio once or twice. So it just gives us a backup in case the first one goes down. And, like I said, gives us all streaming hacking all the time. So I've also been working on just updating the server in general. We upgraded the kernel on the BinRev server, so got a new secure kernel. So any of you guys that have been footprinting, you got to start over, testing some new features, blah, 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 blah. But what I think everybody's probably waiting to hear since I mentioned it a moment ago was an update on HackTV. And Rax can now confirm this, as well as Duel and some of the other guys. The intros are done. And the segments for episode one are done and filmed, selected. We're just putting them together into a show. So, and not only that, but we actually have a good start on episode two segments. So, and when I say we, of course I mean Saito. He's the one doing everything. So, shouts to him. Keep sending in footage. We've got a lot of good stuff from us, from DDP members. We've also had good submissions that we're going to be using, so contact me if you want to submit anything. I think I added a section to the FAQ on binrev.com. If you go to the FAQ link, there's a question that gives you some information there. You can always contact me directly, stankdog@binrev.com, about how to submit stuff. What we have now decided on, and I'm not sure if I've mentioned this officially, so this is the official statement. We're going with a 30-minute show. We kicked the idea around. We had enough footage scattered here and there. We were talking about maybe doing a full-hour show. We didn't know if we wanted to do... We even talked about at one point releasing just individual videos without making it an official show, just putting them up on the website, kind of like we do the gallery. We've decided now we're going to do 30-minute episodes. So we have the first one already laid out, just going through the video editing process. And once we get rolling, since the opening segment, the introductions and stuff, and then the closing, for the most part, they're going to be static. So we won't have to redo any work on those for the most part. So once we get flowing, it's pretty much just going to be plugging in the footage and the segments inside of it for each half-hour show. So as soon as we get them, as fast as you send us some footage and as fast as we film footage, we're going to start spitting them out, hopefully. That first one is the toughest, as they always say. But we are still a few weeks away, maybe even less, from releasing episode one. So that is the official statement, so keep an eye out. Rax, you saw the opening, and I'm putting you on the spot. What did you think?
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I was very happy with it. It was even better than I expected. I mean, Saito is doing great work, and I was impressed. I was very impressed, I have to say. So, other than that, I've been working on Oracle PLSQL, like I talk about all the time, writing a lot of PLSQL programs. I put together... I was talking to Duel about this, Rax. I slipped this in on you. I was talking to Duel. I bought a DVD rack. I've got a bunch of smaller ones around the house. I have pretty big DVD collection that I started years ago when DVDs were much cheaper and you could get a lot of good bargains on the internet. Maybe I'll share that story another day. But I have a pretty good DVD collection, so I have been buying like a little rack here at Walmart that holds 50 or a rack that holds 100, et cetera, et cetera.
Wait a minute. Did you go into the Evil Empire store?
The which Evil Empire would that be?
The W1?
There's so many to choose from. I don't think I've ever bought a DVD from that particular one, no.
Okay, I thought I heard you say the W word.
I did buy some the racks from them. Hmm. Not to make a play on words there. R-A-C-K-S.
that's one of the entendres for my name, but that's another story.
Exactly. I think I did buy a couple of my first racks from them. They were cheap, $10, you know, plywood, generic junk, basically. And basically wherever I could find them cheap. So, yeah, I kind of used them for that, I have to say. But I finally broke down and bought a nice one. I ordered it over the web. It got here. I put it together last weekend. Got all my DVDs off the scattered racks here and there. Put them all together. Got them nice and mounted. Got my nice box sets all shiny at the top and looking cool and everything. So I bust out my laptop like a true geek. I got them all divided up by genre, alphabetized, matching cases, everything. Got my thermal laser printer. I'm going to start labeling out, you know, putting it on the shelf beneath it. Got out my laptop, went for the old trusty QCAT, flipped the laptop around, and I realized, ah, there's no PS2 port on my laptop. Damn it! Curses! Foiled again! So here I was, getting ready to go through and put the whole collection into the laptop, put it into my database, have all that stuff handy so I could get an exact count. Because I don't know if you collect DVDs or anybody out there runs into this, but I'll be at the store, and I'm like, oh, I love this movie, but do I already have it? I don't remember if I bought this or not.
I don't have that many, but...
Yeah, so I find that a lot, and I don't want to buy duplicates, which I've done a couple times. So, yeah, I want to have a nice database and maybe even keep it in the trunk of my car. I'm that much of a geek. And I couldn't do it because I have to go get an adapter now so I can plug the damn QCAT into a USB port or something. Or make treks back and forth to my desktop. Or carry the desktop there in front of it. Who knows?
There you go.
Life sucks. What can I tell you? Anyway, that's been my week. Lots of silly stuff, but hey, what can I tell you? What do you got going on?
Well, I just got back. I was, as many people know, I'm in Arizona, sunny, warm Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to Michigan for some personal business. And let me tell you, talking about life sucks, man. Okay, I've lived in Arizona for 16 years. I haven't driven in the snow for 17 years. And I went back in one of the coldest, biggest snowstorms they had in the last 20 years. So imagine the deep freeze at your the walk-in deep freeze at your favorite supermarket or warehouse chain. That's what it's like out there. And that was really an eye-opener in more ways than one. But and then driving through in snowstorms and all this other stuff. But I did get to see the Detroit Auto Show.
Oh, wait a minute. Before you can, are we allowed to ask what type of car you were driving?
It was a rear-wheel drive. It was Infiniti.
Oh.
So, but I made it through the snow. Didn't fall off the roads or anything else. Even though I was on the and shouts to Gluco and the other hose heads up there in Canada. I made it back into Canada and saw some friends. So I was on the 401. Driving in like 40 mile an hour winds with the snow blowing and everything else, and you get these big ass semis that are passing you. You get two of them slipstreaming behind each other, and you get completely snow blind for a minute. I mean, you can't see anything but white. That was scary. But
you didn't miss it at all, did you?
No, not at all. But got to see the Detroit Auto Show. That was great. Lots of vehicles there, and I actually went to the Barrett Jackson Auto Auction here in Phoenix yesterday and saw. Now Sunday that we're recording this, but saw a lot of really cool cars, a lot of really expensive cars. The most expensive car that sold while I was there was a 1942 Lincoln Phantom or something with a V12 sold for $420,000. So
Ooh.
Lots of big bucks. Some people still have bucks out there, but that's not a whole bunch related technology related for that. But as I said, I was out of town on doing some biz. And just doing my normal thing. I did see something. This just popped up today again on Slashdot. They are calling it it's Cooperative Linux. And what this is as opposed to user mode Linux with Sigwin, which was known as UML Win32. Just saw this tonight. It was just recently released. But basically, you can, with a couple little kernel changes, you can take and run Linux itself, the entire operating system, from within Windows and click it and launch it, even like Nopix and all this other stuff.
Hmm.
So that looks pretty cool. So I'm going to be playing with that here in the near term.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'd like to hear a follow-up on that if you get into that a little bit.
Yeah.
That
I think it's really
good.
Cool, again, just to expose more people to Linux and open source type of stuff.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big Nopix fan. Nopix is huge. As a matter of fact, before we went on the show tonight, I took a look just on my hard drive here, all my ISOs that I have in my Linux and various BSD SD derivatives. Mm-hmm. It's about 15 gig of ISOs. So I play around with a lot of different versions of that, and like to play around with a lot of stuff. So if I get a chance to work with it's called CoLinux, colinux.org. CoLinux.org is the site. And I'm going to take a look at it, maybe report back on it later.
Okay, yeah, well, and we'll put that site up in the show notes for everybody, but it's pretty easy to remember. What about at the auto show? Did they have any, what do they call them, preview cars? What do they call them, concept cars?
Cars? Oh, I thought you were going to ask about the booth babes. Yeah, there was booth babes there, too.
Oh, yeah, oh, come on, that was the next question, booth babes. Should have been the first question, I guess.
Oh, yeah, get your priorities all wrong, man.
I know, what am I thinking?
Yeah, a lot of neat concept cars. Got to see the new Mustang, looks really hot. From Ford. Ford also has a new Cobra. I think it was a concept car. And
yeah,
Ford
I saw
is
that.
Doing the GT40, the late supercar from the 60s. That's looking really hot. Jeep has their answer to the H2. It's called the Rescue. That was a concept car there. A few other things. I got to say, the ugliest looking car, the new Rolls Royce. The front end looks like a Mack truck. I am not kidding. It
wow.
looks like a Mack truck's grill. On this Rolls Royce.
And there's probably, we'll put it up in the show notes also, there's probably a website for that Detroit Auto Show. I don't know what it is offhand.
Yeah,
and you can usually see pictures and videos sometimes of,
yeah.
of what they have.
So. A lot of neat things. Toyota actually launched a new line, you know, so there's Toyota's
Scion.
Mid-range. They have Lexus, which is a higher range, and they've launched a new line that's called Scion.
S-C-I-O-N, yep.
Scion, and Scion means a descendant of, like, the Scion of Shannara, if anyone's read those stories. Anyway, and I saw one.
Is it Shannara or Shannara?
Shannara. I always thought it was Shannara, but I got one of the audios of the books on tape, and they said Shannara the whole time. So
oh, okay.
Figured I was wrong. But anyway, so I saw one of these in Phoenix before I left, and you know how the Honda Element looks bad to me.
Oh yeah, I think that's a box on wheels.
Okay, this Scion, as I found out, it's a Scion, but. It looks literally like a Cracker Box on wheels. I was reminded of the Yugo.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Oh, yeah, very, very square, anti-aerodynamic. It's like the Borg cube, you know, floating through space. Well, imagine driving one of those things down the road. They did have another car, you know, another Scion there that looked okay, but, you know, everyone's going for this SUV crap.
I know.
The other interesting thing that was there, and I got to see in person, you couldn't go in it in that, but it's an urban car from Germany, and the website is sparked.com. It's called the Smart Car. And get this, it's a two-seater, doesn't even make any pretext about having a back seat. But here's how small it is. Again, just designed for driving in the city. It's probably like a two-cylinder engine or something like that. Instead of parallel parking, you can nose in this thing in a regular parking space, like on a street, and be clear of the street. And they have various configurations in that. I mean, this thing gets like 80 miles to the gallon or something. That was actually in the edge of the Mercedes booth, I guess. Mercedes has something to do with these guys and that, but lots of interesting things, lots of people, lots of good stuff. Probably the most technologically advanced car, if we you know trying to wrap it back into technology, is the Toyota Prius, the hybrid car.
Yes, we talked about that on previous episodes. That is a very nice automobile.
Yeah, Bluetooth enabled. You know, so if you have a Bluetooth cell phone, you don't even have to unplug or do anything.
Yep.
All this other stuff in it. And I guess Honda, and I just saw it, I didn't see it there, but I guess Honda announced, you know, Honda has their Insight, the little hybrid one. Last year they came out with a hybrid Civic 2000, I guess for the 2005 year, which calendar year, which means like the October 2004, they're going to have a hybrid Accord.
Hmm.
That was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I know they do have a hybrid Civic that they just released this past one, I believe.
Yep.
In addition to, they do have a hybrid line.
Yeah, well, the Honda Insight was their first.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you're right, Insight, that's what it was.
Yep.
So, yeah, they're going to start mixing it into their model lines. It's not just a line itself anymore. They're going
right.
to start mixing it into the model lines. And
they're supposed to also be working on the hydrogen cell vehicle, and they have it. They can work now to four below, which wouldn't help people in the Midwest right now.
They right.
wouldn't be able to use it because it's with the wind chill is colder than that. But you know, hydrogen fuel cells is very cool technology, and I'm sure you probably talked about this before too, Snake. But Toshiba is looking at, and they actually have some prototypes of that. And they expect to have them out, I think, this year. Laptops that will run on hydrogen fuel cells. And the FAA has approved the use of these hydrogen fuel cells to be taken into airplanes. So you'll have a thing about the size of a big lighter that you'll pop out, pop another little cartridge in and keep going and keep computing. So that big old heavy battery and all the space it took up and all the weight it gave you is going to be going bye-bye.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting news indeed. All right, well, let's, boy, we can go, you and I, you know that?
Wind us up, point us in direction, we'll talk forever.
I'll tell you what, boy, we're running out here. Let's skip ahead, and let's go cover a few more of these 101 ways to save the Internet, which I think you've been following. I'm not sure if you're caught up completely on the show. I know how that is. But it's 101. It's an article from Wired Magazine. 101, basically 101 complaints, bitches and complaints about problems with the Internet and potential solutions, and kind of just go through them and talk about whether we agree, whether they're feasible, whether they're good idea, bad idea, that type of stuff. And we ended last week with number 41. And earlier I cleared up the Fandango, which I think was 35. Yeah, 35 here. So we're going to start today with number 42. Does that sound cool with you?
Sounds good to me.
All right. We may get stuck on 42 knowing the way you and I talk, but let's see how we go here. Number 42 says, replace servers with P2P, or peer-to-peer. Too many network services, domain names, web servers, email, rely on the old client-server model, which is vulnerable to attack. Well, I'm not sure. Peer-to-peer is vulnerable to attack.
Well, obviously, as part of it is there's no centralized system to attack, first of all.
Right.
And if you look at something like BitTorrent, which breaks something up into shards, as I think is the term they call it, it kind of models the Internet. You know, if you think back to your, you know, history of computing 101 type of thing, you remember that, you know, the ARPANET was originally, which grew into the Internet, was originally developed to withstand a nuclear attack. So if one point in the ARPANET was bombed by those godless commies, who are now our friends, by the
right.
way, but anyway.
Funny how things change.
So if there was something to be attacked, a central point to be attacked, the system could figure out and route around that. And that's how routers, that's how everything works. Well, a lot of these peer-to-peer types of things as well, you know, thinking specifically like a BitTorrent, because I've been playing with that a lot lately. If, you know, I'm sharing something, you know, I've got the latest ISO for Novix, and, you know, Stank starts downloading it from me, Stank will automatically, his client will set up and it'll start sharing for someone else. So when Dual wants to pick it up, he'll be getting some from me and some from Stank. Obviously, he can't get anything from Stank that Stank doesn't have, but as we go through this and the more people we have sharing it, as we decentralize this control, if, you know, once someone else has a full copy of it, if I shut mine down, it really doesn't affect things. Yeah, it may make it a little bit slower, but there's no central point of control, no central single point of failure.
Right. Well, it's safer from that aspect, but at the same time, it comes with its own problems as well. Peer-to-peer has problems with well, let's be frank, there's viruses that are spread via peer-to-peer because it's a self-policing community. And you don't know, you have to trust a lot of sources from people that you don't know. Now, again, that is something that's innate to the topography, but, you know, it's just a different type of danger. And that's just one, you know, there's going to be security problems. Their logic of whether one's more or less vulnerable to attack, I mean, everything is vulnerable to attack, so I would debate the logic of it. However, yes, the point of centralized versus decentralized, it's still it could be a good movement, but I don't know. The reality of that, the thing is, people want control, and corporations and companies don't want decentralized. They want everything under their reign of control. They don't want to share.
And obviously, and you have a very good point there, Stank, because certain things, you know, you have to get from one centralized place because, you know, you have authenticity, non-repudiation, all, you know, putting all those issues aside. But some things do not lend itself very well to a peer-to-peer type of approach. There has to be
security,
a centralized thing. Because, you know, again, the viruses, the changing of the data, you know, who can you trust, all that type of thing. So it's not you can't get rid of servers, at least, you know, nothing I've seen or read about have seen anything of the futurist thinking kind of people. I don't see anything that's going to replace that. I don't think peer-to-peer is what's going to do it.
No. And just there are solutions to even those things. There's checksums that you can use to verify files and data as being valid and stuff like that, but that's a little too technical and frankly complex for most typical users. So I don't see that as a proper solution. And go ahead with what you're going to say. It's the same thing.
Even if you built that all that in and had a PKI, public key infrastructure, all built in, let's face it, MD5 is going to be cracked relatively soon. Okay, RSA, that's good. Basically, I think in my research, as I found out, for anything for military grade usage, they say if it's if they can get, what is it? I think it's 10 to 20 years out of it. So if it would take, if with Moore's law on that, if the computing horsepower in 10 to 20 years is not going to be able to, in a reasonable length of time, and I don't know how they define that, but it's not going to be able to break, like the RSA cryptography, then it's viable. So as we get more powerful computers, let alone, 64-bit, okay, that's still, standard kind of stuff, let alone if we get into quantum computing eventually, then it goes up by a whole order of magnitude.
Right.
So, you can do those things. You can build into the clients that will automatically look at the checksums and look at the MD5s and all that other type of stuff. That some of that stuff can be made transparent to the user, but again, as Dan said, it's not going to answer everything.
Yeah, and it's a long ways off.
Absolutely.
All right, number 43, unleash. I guess this is kind of a funny one. Unleash Jeff Bezos Rockstar. Now, come on, Jeff, you can build a better music store than that dude in the black turtleneck or Mr. Bill. Now, Jeff Bezos is, of course, Amazon.com CEO, am I correct?
Right.
So I guess that's just a nod to Amazon saying they may have dropped the ball, lost it to some other people. I'm not sure who the dude in the black turtleneck refers to, do you?
Steve Jobs.
Oh, yeah, of course. I should have caught that one.
Hey, speaking of which, I got to throw this into another little tidbit off of Slashdot.
This day in history?
No, off of Slashdot.
Nah, go ahead.
Bill Gates,
mm-hmm.
The Queen of England, is going to knight him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, somebody mentioned that in the forums, as a matter of fact.
No, it's like, wait a minute. First of all, hey, Liz, if you're listening, okay, first of all, he's not a British subject. You lost the war. You can't really give him a knighthood. I know you can give an honorary knighthood, but it was supposed to be for, improving the global economy. Can you say, are you knighting him because he's made a global monopoly?
Mm-hmm.
So Liz, come on, think about it again. You gave it to Mick Jagger, or Paul McCartney, I can see. Mick Jagger, man, didn't Ozzy Osbourne just get knighted or something too? I mean, she's giving these things away like, toasters at your local bank. It's not going to mean anything anymore.
It's like having a star on the Walk of Fame,
There you go. Sir Bill. Oh, yeah. Great.
Great. Oh, I thought you were going to mention that, 20th anniversary you were talking about earlier?
20th anniversary of the original Mac on January 24th, 1984. That's when it was officially announced.
Remember the big dramatic commercial, too, 1984, with the woman running in with the hammer, wasn't it?
Yep.
At the screen.
And in fact, that commercial was only ever shown on TV just once. It's
the Super Bowl.
Floating around on the internet forever, but it was only shown just once on the Super Bowl that year.
Yep. And you know what? Isn't it so funny to be shown once to be a legendary commercial is not driven down your throat over and over again like the Budweiser commercials and stuff.
Yeah, hey, I still miss the talking frogs.
Yeah, well, who doesn't? What about the lizards?
Yeah, lizards I can live without, but...
And the ferret?
Oh, the ferret needed to die.
Yeah, they've run out of talking animals.
Yeah.
Anyway, off on a tangent like we do. Number 44, publish Creative Commons for Dummies. The open copyright licensing system is pure genius, but you need to be a genius to use it.
Well, first of all, let's talk about getting some publicity out there for it. Most people don't know about it. You're starting to see a few things around on websites about it now. If you haven't gone to, it's creativecommons.org, right, Stank?
I believe so. Is it one word?
Yeah, I'll try it here as we're talking. But
and we'll put it up in the show notes just to confirm for everyone.
So if you haven't gone, basically what it is, unlike some corporate entities would like you to think, it's not saying down with copyright. Matter of fact, it builds on copyright. It's saying that the person or company that creates something has the choice of how it can be used. Most people choose, up until this point, in commercial companies and all that, choose to retain the copyright, all rights reserved. Well, what Creative Commons does is allow you, the creator of an original piece of something, to choose how that's going to be used. You may say, yeah, everyone can use it, that's fine. You may say, everyone can use it, but they have to say, I made it. Or everyone can use it, but they can't change it. You have all those choices with Creative Commons. And it is creativecommons.org. If you go there and click on the little Learn More button, there's nice little animations and things. But I don't know if it's too complex. I just think not enough people know about it.
Yeah, that they insinuate that, like it says here, you need to be a genius to use it. I don't know about all that, but...
Well, they have a wizard there that you click on and say, okay, what do you want to do with this? What do you want to do about that? They have a wizard to fill it out for you, and it'll tell you, this is the kind of license you want. What more do you need?
Yeah, I actually would need to read more about that myself. That's one of those things I have bookmarked to finish reading one day, and I need to do.
Okay, what's the next one? We're moving pretty good.
Well, we've made it through three, I think. Actually, we're going to make it through 50 at least. Okay, number 45 is very short and sweet. VeriSign must die.
Agreed.
There's not even a blurb after it. It's just the header.
Yeah, next. I agree.
And
next point.
I do too. Actually, I want to add one minor thing. Like, one of the first articles I ever wrote was bashing VeriSign and pointing out tons of flaws and how much I hated them and how they... It was an art, and it never got published anywhere by anybody. I submitted it to several different places, maybe because it wasn't written well, but I really think more so because nobody at the time was scared to touch it. I don't know if it was a controversial thing or if it just sucked, but I just want to throw that out there. One of the first things, and I've been preaching for years how much they suck and how much I hate them. So, yes, VeriSign must die.
Okay.
Number 46, Free the Beeb. And for those of you who don't know the Beeb, the BBC is dragging its feet on a plan to put its vast archives online. Come on, chaps, it's your best idea since Monty Python.
Well, they already licensed all the Monty Python content to Comedy Central. By the way, for the record, speaking of DVD collections, I do have every Monty Python episode, the whole DVD, 17 DVD set. But
yeah, I look at it every time I go in or see it, but it's just a little pricey for me.
Oh, man, you got to go for it. It's
worth it. I know. It's good stuff, but yeah, that's on my wish list.
But see, the thing is, the BBC has such rich content and has so much, it'd be... Well, there's not even... I'm not even going to try drawing the comparison to any of the American broadcast television things, because it's commercial. The BBC, obviously, they have commercials in that, too, but it's just... I think it's a different animal. I don't know if you'd agree with that,
yeah.
Stank, or not.
Well, I have one of my all-time favorite shows ever on any network and anything is Red Dwarf. I have all the Red Dwarf episodes on videotape, and they're up to season 2 on DVD right now, which I've also purchased. So, yeah, they've got... And they make documentaries that are just to die for. I mean, some of their like, I don't know if you've ever seen Walking with Dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, it's just amazing. It's just... They make a lot of really good stuff. George Orwell, A Life in Pictures. I don't know if listeners have seen that. Nick 84 actually hooked me up with that.
I guess the closest thing you could kind of come to, it's kind of a cross between PBS, public broadcast system here in the States, and commercial television, because they have advertisements and they have regular comedy series and they have multiple channels in that, but they have such a rich content history, you know, for 100-year-old images and all that type of thing, and that's what they're saying. If that can be put online, that would just enrich and, you know, everything available to the world.
Well, as long as we're going to make a soup of what it's like, I'd throw in PBS, but I'd also throw in Discovery and TLC in there. You know, a lot of
channels it really is kind of a combination of all of it.
Yeah.
And there's something kind of similar already has been done a bit, and it's with old TV commercials and that. Matter of fact, I even saw one of the. I don't know if you played with Winamp 5, but you know you can have view the video content through Winamp now.
I refuse to go above Winamp 2.91.
Oh, five is killer. What they did, they took the two code and the three code, and they merged it. 2 + 3 = 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth it. Definitely worth it. Check it out.
Well, I might check it out on my work system, but
yeah. But
I don't
anyway,
have high expectations for it. I got to be honest with you, but I'll try to give it a shot since you endorse it.
Yeah, well, 3 sucked, okay?
Oh, yes, it's so badly that that's the reason I don't even want to look at 5.
Right, but there were some cool features in there. So they took out those cool features, rewrote it to the 2.x code base, and rather than calling it 4 because 3 was such a debacle, they called it 5. 2 + 3 = 5. Anyway, so there was getting back to the point here, is that if you archive.org, they have like old television commercials and everything like that. There's some cool stuff there. I mean, I think even they even have like Edison's original films that he shot and all this stuff. All that old stuff that's fallen into the public domain and that is available to you at archive.org. So imagine if that rich content of almost, you know, 100 years of film and television that the BBC has, and again, think of it like PBS and broadcast television and all the best of cable TV Discovery Channels and History Channel, put that all online, that would be such a great contribution to, you know, just the cultural level of data that's available to the world.
Yep. But, you know, you can't help but wonder. It's all about the money. I'm buying Red Dwarf DVDs, and apparently so are others. And if they make this freely available online, you know, that's probably what is holding it back or making them drag their feet. I'm sure there's some executive somewhere that's, you know, using that as their...
Well, take out all the Monty Pythons and the Red Dwarfs and the Doctor Whos and, you know,
and
the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. Take all those things out and leave them out for now, but, you know, let's set everything else free. Don't
at
hold
least
it all
get,
back.
Yeah, at least get started, right. All right, number 47, another short one with no explanation. It just simply says, upgrade phone booths to Wi-Fi.
They started doing that in New York, I think, and Canada as well.
Yeah, and we talked about that a long time ago, how, you know, Wi-Fi was taking off, and sometimes we were equating the number of phone booths disappearing versus the number of Internet kiosks growing. So we've kind of talked about that, so I don't think there's too much more to say. And I gotta be honest, I'm reading some of these for the first time myself, so this is all off the cuff here. And I know you haven't seen it because it's sitting in front of me, so...
I did kind of read through the article, but I don't remember each point.
Yeah. Number 48, Free Rob Glaser. Glazer, G-L-A-S-E-R?
He's the former Microsoft guy that started Real Networks.
The barrage of pop-ups that clutter the screen when we try to use Real One can only be a cry for help. Geek guru Glazer is being held hostage by his own marketing department.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. You would install something and you'd have to like go 47 clicks in to make sure you didn't get some kind of little advertising pop-up stuff.
Yeah, I hate Real. I always have and I always will.
Well, but you know, they've started going more for the light side of things. First of all, it's not too bad anymore. It's not too bad to not have all the advertising in. But they released all that source code. I don't know exactly which license, if it's GPL in it, but for Helix. And so that's now, you know, freely available for any operating system, you know, Linux and OS X and anything else that anyone's working on. So they are starting to more embrace the thing, and I think that's because as they're, you know, finding out, as they're trying to compete with Microsoft, and the juggernaut that is Microsoft, obviously Real Networks had the jump on it, but I think they've seen that to successfully compete against Microsoft, you have to give stuff away. And, I mean, completely give it away, not just make it no charge. You have to completely open up the kimono and give everybody everything.
Yep, open the kimono. That's a good visual there.
That's a little side note here, too. I've said it a few times in that, but I think it was about 1990, probably about 1991, I almost invented streaming audio. Another story. I almost invented it. I came up with the idea, and we're working on it, and I just kind of let it drop. So, but anyway, it could be free... Racks. I almost said my real name there. It could be free racks, to, you know, from all the pop up stuff. But anyway,
that's why we record early. We could have edited that out. But, I invented hyperlinking too. By the way, just thought I'd throw that out.
Oh, Doug Engelbart did that in 1968.
All right, and he has a patent on it.
Yeah, and you were how old in 68?
I was -3.
You weren't even a twinkle in your daddy's eye. Okay,
exactly. I don't think I ever was, but that's a whole nother story. Number 40. Okay, we're going to go through 51. 52 starts a new little subsection, so we're going to do three more here. Number 49, mesh networks everywhere. If wireless signals could hop from gadget to gadget, we wouldn't have to hunt for hotspots.
There was something I was reading in the UK. They were putting, streetlights? They were putting, like, repeaters for Wi-Fi. And that's how they were going to get broadband out into the sticks,
well,
you know, the boondock areas and stuff.
Well, I'm not sure, when you say repeat, I'm not sure that's what they're going for here.
But, I mean, basically, if I understand it right, in the mesh network, every node is a repeater. So it cleans up, regenerates the signal, and allows, it literally builds that mesh over the, you know.
Well, that's... Sounds like what you're talking about more describes the canopy, the Wi-Fi canopy that everybody dreams about, as far as coverage area. This more sounds like, with the mesh networks, is talking about hopping from gadget to gadget. Security-wise, I would say this will never work. But I think what they're saying is, you and I both have cell phones. I can send, let's say where I'm not in a area of where there is coverage, but I can send a message and it would see your gadget individually, like almost like a Bluetooth type thing. And yes, I can't get out, but I can get one step closer. And then you walk into New York City and you happen to get within Wi-Fi, you then transfer it on my behalf. I think that's what they're going with here, that the signal can travel from person to person, item to item, until you finally get into internet neighborhood or internet coverage, I think is what they're trying to insinuate with here, which in a dream world would be wonderful, but the security implications, like I said, are just mind-numbing, and B, bandwidth, and oh, there's just way too many logistical nightmares for this.
Well, on top of that, I mean, let's even get, we were talking about IP version 4 versus version 6. Let's face it, IP version 4 is back from, you know, the hippie days of things in the late 60s where everyone trusted everybody.
Right.
And, you know, it was it was used by academia and that, and there was no need for security. Well,
right.
Sorry, it's a different world. We really need to change that underlying infrastructure first. I mean, that's why email is broken and everything. So we have to change that first before any mesh type of thing will come to life.
All right, but it's a good idea way down the road, way down the road. But yeah, it's definitely after IPv6 before it could even be thought of again. I think it's way too early. And then again, the security. But anyway, yeah, I don't think that's too realistic right now. Number 50. Oh, you'll love this one. Speaking of the big W, number 50. Add a broadband department to Walmart. You've put every local hardware store out of business. How about the cable guy and the phone company next?
Well, you know, Sam Walton was pretty good buddies with Bill Gates. You know, they were playing, they used to play bridge together.
You know, I don't know how you're going to feel about me making this statement, but I happen to think that Walmart was great, was perfectly fine when Sam Walton was in charge of it, when Sam Walton was around. It's since Sam Walton died that Walmart has turned into the monster that it is today.
Can I draw a similar parallel?
By all means.
The Disney Corporation after Walt Disney died.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good.
They put an accountant in charge. You know, even they've got friends in it, things through the grapevine. And even like the little, stuffed animals and stuff that you get from Disneyland or Disney World now. They've cheapened those down, you know, and that whole vision and everything else that Walt had has just been perverted.
Well, it all comes down to the bottom line, and how many times have I gone onto the soapbox about how money and greed ruins things? I mean, Sam Walton, you know, the whole reason that Walmart took off and became successful was because of his idea of, as simple as it sounds, providing quality products at a low price, and at the same time, it was all about customer service. That was the number one key that made Walmart successful. It was always about the customer. Always. You could go back and return anything to Walmart. You could go back and any problems that you had, they'd work it out. That was their philosophy. Whatever it takes. And we don't serve customers anymore in anything in this world. And I'm going to get off the soap op now. You try to take something back to Walmart. If anybody's trying to take it back, you know you're not going to take software, video games, movies, any of that back. They're not going to take that back. They refuse.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, if anyone out there recalls, remember the ads where they used to, and this is probably when Sam was still around, but remember the ads out there when Walmart was talking about, you know, made in the USA?
Right.
All this stuff. Well, you know, because of their business practices and that, here's a prime example is Levi Strauss. Levi, and there's articles, you probably have links to it already in that, but if not, I can get you some as well.
Mm-hmm.
Levi Strauss no longer manufactures clothing in this country. It's all outsourced to, you know, Asian third world countries, because all they do is design now. And that model was forced on them because Walmart said, this is the price we're going to pay for your things or we will not carry them.
Right. And that's disgusting that they have that kind of power.
So, you know, but it used to be buy in the USA, right? Well, now Walmart has, because of their power, has forced all these companies to outsource things.
Yeah.
And where are those jobs going, by the way? You know, so, you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, so, you know, you get up in the morning, you know, you have your, you know, you put on your imported leather shoes, and you have all this, you know, Italian leather shoes and all this other stuff. You get in your German-made car, and you know, drive down, wonder why you can't find a job. It's because of, you know, globalization has outsourced all these things. So.
Yeah, and it just makes me, I'm sorry, I'm so angry. I interrupt sometimes, I apologize, but it's so angry that now we're going to complain and whine about why there's no jobs in the USA and how everything's being outsourced. But big corporations like the Walmarts of the world are pushing this and making that happen.
It's all about the Benjamins.
And I still have the utmost respect for Sam Walton and what he started off with in Buy American and forcing Americans to make better goods, which I'm sorry, I still say is some truth to the matter, that I think Americans don't make as good a product sometimes. They've improved, and Walmart and its original philosophy, I think, helped drive that, and now they've gone in the opposite direction. So I really, you know, his big philosophy that I always believed and always loved, too, it's an old saying called, eat your own dog food.
Yep.
And he literally, and when I say literally, he literally did that. The line of dog, I don't know if it still is to this day, but his line of dog food, Walmart brand or whatever, was called, I think it was called Old Roy, which was named after Sam Walton's dog. He named the dog the dog food, and he fed the dog that same dog food. He literally lived by that slogan. Eat your own dog food. Buy American. Support American. And, yeah, I'm going to back off that soapbox, too, because...
There's an interesting corollary to that, though, as I was reading something online here lately. I was talking about, actually, I think it was the latest Robert X. Kringley article. You can get that at pbs.org or link on a /. But he's talking about, you know, this kind of globalization things again. He's talking about BMW has a plant in North Carolina. And not only does BMW have it to get it, you know, closer to its market and have less shipping costs than that, it's actually cheaper for BMW to do business in North Carolina and in the United States of America than it is in Germany, because the way the labor laws and everything are set up. Did you know that for an employee, basically a company has to have the government's permission, a German company has to have the government's permission to have employees work overtime, and it's very expensive to have. So it's cheaper, the way our laws and things are structured, it's cheaper for BMW to build cars over here. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, if anybody really is interested, I'm not positive I've got this right, but Sam Walton's book that he wrote before he died, which explained a lot of his philosophies, I think it was called Made in America, if I'm correct. So I will put a link up to that to Amazon if anybody is interested in the show notes. And the last one, number 51, last one we're going to cover tonight because we're way over, I'm pretty sure. It's 51 says, and while you're at it, following up on Walmart broadband, and while you're at it, bundle a combo PC, DSL cable modem, and wireless home router for, say, $299.
Hmm.
Is that reasonable? Is that realistic?
You're getting kind of close to some of that stuff.
PC, DSL cable modem alone, you know, can cost you $100 probably.
I mean, you can.
Well, if you buy it from, like, for example, if you buy it from Bell South, my local telco, I think it's $199.
Anyone's insane if they're paying that much.
Well, and they are.
Or anything else, like the little Linksys boxes, even without the wireless, it's like $49 street price.
Well, I'm talking about just the DSL modem.
The modem itself, right?
Yeah, the DSL modem. The Linksys, you can get that for $50
all day long. I think I've seen them at Fry's Electronics for $79 now.
Yeah, I think you can get them for $50 all day long for the low-end models, the very cheaply made after-rebate kind of situations. But the DSL modem, cable modem... Well, actually, my cable modem... it's built into the cost of the monthly service. You don't have to pay for it up front. It's leased.
Yeah.
Just like a cable box. So, which is fine, because as long as it's still cheaper than the DSL.
But
it would be nice to own it.
You get the economies of scale if you start putting that in every machine. It's like CD-ROM players, right? When CD-ROM players have been out, they were out for 10 years. They were a solution looking for a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they were too expensive for individuals to put in. Well, now you can't buy a computer without a CD-ROM player. Matter of fact, it's getting so you can't buy a computer without a CD-ROM burner. So
yeah.
Once they start including it on every unit that's made, you know, even if you use it or not use it, you know, that's kind of your choice, and if you're not using it, obviously you're paying for something you're not using. But once they can get the scales of economy to doing that on the by having it in every unit, I think they can get it down to that price.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, there you have it. That's up to 51. We're about halfway, so we still got that to go for a little while longer, but we're going to close it up today. We're way, way over. I hope we don't interrupt into a quarter circle forward, the show that follows us. I hope we're under an hour and a half, but let's go to shout-outs, and actually, I'll go ahead and shout-out. My shouts go to Logan5. I've done that many times. Does great work. And Saito187, who's working on Hack TV. These guys are doing such great work on our DDP projects, and I have these visions of what I want done, and I frankly don't have the ability, I don't have the artistic talent, I don't have the skills to make some of this, and these guys are not only fulfilling them, but enhancing them and driving it even forward. They're the ones doing clean, professional work. If I had to do it myself, it would end up being not nearly as nice, wouldn't look as good. So my shouts, Logan5, Saito187, great work. I have nothing but respect and appreciation for what they're doing. Why don't you, what do you got shout-outs this week?
I got shouts to Slip Mode, who's kind of coming back into the fold for the 2600 things down here. He got in touch with 9-volt and got a lot of stuff straightened out, so we've got the proper information now on AZ2600. So shouts to Slip for that, and also Zapperlink, because he's all doing all the kinds of stuff on the site and keeping that going as well. Plus, the whole gang out here in PHX.
Yep. Shouts to them. I second that. You guys got a lot of good people. You really do. You got a lot of people that contribute and are active and.
Matter of fact, I'm gonna little bit of thing out of the bag. Slipmode will probably have it on his show in the now. But Slip and I were talking the other day about trying to do maybe not exactly a conference, but trying to do some kind of hacker gathering down in Phoenix sometime. So check for that on the boards, and we're gonna be working some ideas and floating some ideas past people too. So we'll let you know about that as it unravels.
Sounds good. You gonna put me up if I come out?
Oh yeah.
You gonna put me in a cot somewhere in the basement?
Well, yeah, we don't have basements out here.
Oh, interesting.
I'll let you cuddle up to a cactus.
Ooh, that sounds even better. All right, and if you have feedback for us, send it to radio@benrev.com. Closing music, I went back to something I had off mp3.com a long time ago. It's called from someone called Pusher Man. It's called Life Gets Choppy. It's just kind of a nice hip-hop beat, nice mellow thing to close out the show, and that's going to do it. So, Rax, you know how we close out the show. Thank you for being here, and let's tell everybody that we're going to see them next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel.